The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Our numbers are close.
You know, okay,
don't have those sit in the back. We got
our admin law panel, right?
I just lost. See, we're back to two.
Okay, back
you don't want to do criminal law? You're not interested in criminal law?
No.
All right. Fine. There's usually a lot more people than this. I don't know. Maybe they've had other criminal law. Maybe they had more than one. Did they offer more than one in each subject area or not? Maybe.
Well, I think it's just one per subject area. I know Professor Tablet's in our class has given like one or two kind of like general sessions after class. So I think probably a lot of people from my section.
You're in Professor. Oh, you're in his criminal procedure. You're in your other criminal law class. Oh, okay, not the one now, obviously, that meets so. Now. That one meets earlier today,
yes.
Right? Like in the morning?
12:20.
Okay.
So I know a lot of people in my section probably would have already asked him.
That makes sense. Well, why don't we get started? I want to wait until 5 after, and then I'll get started. Give you a few more minutes. So in case somebody else comes, I won't have to repeat myself.
an event right now? Really?
We're supposed to be having an advising session now. Why, is somebody trying to use this room?
No, I asked him because we're going to put another episode up later.
Right, we're supposed to be in here. How long is the session supposed to go until 5?
4:50.
Until 4:50, yeah, so we'll be out of here by then.
All right.
Okay?
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, why don't we just get started? So, since there's only two of you, I can give you all a lot of good personal sort of attention. So, why don't I just ask you both sort of your interest in criminal law? You're both interested in careers in criminal law. What do you think right now? Is that what you're kind of leaning towards? Although, you know, you're one L, so you probably shouldn't convey final decisions about anything, but is that kind of where the interest in criminal law comes from?
I mean, I kind of came into law school wanting to do criminal law stuff.
Okay.
I've also now found that I might be interested in business things, and I know that there's obviously an overlap, but I would say that it's definitely sort of like the direction I'd like to...
Defense or prosecution?
Probably prosecution.
Okay.
We'll see how well I'm able to handle my student loans once I work with the
government. Gotcha. How about you?
Same thing, kind of came in thinking criminal law. I waffle between defense and prosecution.
Okay.
So.
Okay. That's cool. So, I guess what I would say is, let me just first say that, you know, even if you know, no matter what field you think you're interested in, it's a good idea to take a broad range of topics from your law. So I would not tell you to just only take criminal law courses. I don't think that's a good idea for anyone, for a variety of reasons. I mean, one is, you know, you don't know what you don't know, if you've ever heard that phrase. When I came to law school, criminal law wasn't even on my radar, and now I can't imagine that I would be doing anything else. I came to law school thinking, oh, I want to be a civil rights lawyer. I didn't really know what that was. You know, that was a long time ago. But I discovered criminal law when I was in law school, and I just loved it. And so I say that to say, and it's just like you're saying already, now you're thinking business. I mean, you can discover so much in law school by keeping your mind open and learning about a lot of different topics, because you just never know when something that sounds like I'm talking out of criminal law, which I'm definitely not. I have an interest in people going into criminal law, prosecution, or defense. I think there's a great need in society for that, so I have a great interest in that. But I am saying take a broad range of topics. First of all, for that reason. Second of all, it's just because as a lawyer, it's a good idea to try to have at least some general knowledge of a number of subjects. I don't know about too much of anything but criminal law. I wish I had sort of like broadened my horizons a little bit, you know. So you need to know at least some basics. There are a couple of schools of thought about whether or not you ought to take courses for the bar, you know, because it's going to be on the bar. I think quite a few professors at this law school say, no, don't take a course because it's going to be on the bar. I kind of been on the fence with that issue. I sort of feel like you don't take a course just because it's going to be on the bar, because when you take the bar, you're going to take a bar prep course anyway. On the other hand, if there are certain subjects that are totally foreign to me, to you, like for me, it was commercial paper and securities and stuff like that. That stuff was foreign to me, and I thought, that's going to be on the bar. I don't want to learn about it for the first time in like a 6-week thing. I feel like I need a broader range of knowledge about it. So that's something to also keep in mind. So along those lines, courses like business transactions, and I know you said you're interested in that anyway, the basic business transactions course, we call it business associations here, I guess, BA. That course, I think every student ought to take it. You know, every student needs to know what a corporation is and how it works. I mean, that's just basic. It's on a lot of bars, but beyond that, you need to know. The basic taxation course, everybody needs to take the basic tax. I mean, these are courses, even though they may, and they may, depending on, like, especially if you're doing white collar crime, you know, those courses are very relevant. Not so relevant if you're doing more public defender work as a defender, but or if you're doing a prosecution of those kinds of crimes. But those are courses that I think are so basic that, you know, everybody who goes to law school needs to know the basics about those. So I would say take BA, take tax. There are other courses that I think are
really relevant to the practice of criminal law, then may not have the word criminal in them. One of the most important ones is evidence. Evidence isn't a required course, but it's, I feel like it ought to be on this. I think every student ought to take evidence, and certainly anyone who's interested in criminal law ought to take the basic evidence course. And we have a number of really good advanced evidence courses as well that you would take after having taken the basic evidence course. There's one called Evidentiary Foundations, which is kind of based, it's a course where it's almost like a trial advocacy course. It's a trial setting where you learn how to make objections and things like that. And then some of our basic evidence professors teach it like that, like Professor Cynthia Jones, who teaches it. She teaches it sort of in case models so you know how to make objections and so on, not just learn the rules. But evidence is a must for anybody interested in criminal law. I would also say to take trial advocacy. We have a really good trial advocacy program here. The basic trial advocacy courses, they have civil trial advocacy and criminal trial advocacy. Obviously, it would be better if you could get into the criminal. I believe the criminal one, it may be offered in the fall and civil in the spring. I'm not quite sure of that. But the trial advocacy, because our trial advocacy program is an excellent program. The sections of trial advocacy, all of them are taught by a team. Usually it's a judge and a lawyer. Most of them are taught by adjuncts, but these are practicing lawyers and judges who are currently sitting, or retired judges who recently sat. And they do a great job. And so trial advocacy, I think, is very important. Try to get in the clinic, okay? We have a terrific clinical program here at the Washington College of Law. Our clinical program, there are lots of different clinics in our clinical program, and one of them is our criminal justice clinic. There's also a general practice clinic that's mostly civil but does some criminal. There's a lot of other clinics. There's a community and economic development clinic. There's a disabilities rights clinic. There's an international human rights clinic. There's a women in the law clinic. Women in the law clinic represents women in domestic violence situations, so that's got a criminal aspect to it too. Obviously, ideally, you would want to get in the criminal clinic, but even if you don't get in the criminal clinic and you end up in the civil clinic, you'll still learn a lot about representing clients and about appearing in court and that kind of thing. And so even if you don't get in the criminal clinic, just getting in the clinic. Now, some of the clinics, like the community and economic development clinic, is more like a transactional clinic. They don't go to court. They do negotiations on the part for clients. I'm not saying that it's not, I mean, it's still very relevant. It's obviously not as relevant as one of the clinics where you're actually going to be representing clients with the supervision of one of the professors. It's not the same. So ideally, it would be better to get in one of those. But I think the clinical experience is an excellent one. We have a great clinical program here. Externships. I highly recommend that you do at least one externship while you're here. And you guys have heard about our externship program. There's so many criminal law opportunities in the Washington, D.C. area that are just fantastic. So I'll just express my bias first. If you're interested in the defense side, there's no better experience than the D.C. Public Defender Service. That office is the number one public defender service in the country. It has that reputation. It's incredibly competitive to get a permanent job there. But it's easier to get an externship there, and externships can't possibly help you get a permanent job there. They really have a very high quality of practice there, and you'll learn a lot. Externships can be done during the school year for credit or during the summer. During the school year, one of the other semesters, obviously you're not there full time. You're there, I don't say 20 hours a week maybe. I can't remember how many hours it is a week. But you get credits. I think you get 2 credits. For working there in the semester, they pair you up with a lawyer, you work closely with that lawyer, and you get to work on motions, draft motions for them, go to court with them, go to visit clients with them. It really gives you an opportunity to see what the practice is like. On the prosecution side in D.C., the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Columbia, all have very high quality practice there as well if you're interested in prosecution. And we have students placed there as well doing the same kind of work. That's just D.C., though. There's other opportunities around here. The Maryland Public Defender, we place lots of students in that office as well. And they go by counties. There's Montgomery County, PG, Prince George's County, Howard County. It's So it's a statewide office. It's the Office of the Public Defender, and you apply there, and then they have the different counties where you're placed. And I've talked to a number of students who've had great experience there. Northern Virginia as well. A little less familiar with the programs out there. Professor Liz Bowles, who runs our trial advocacy program, however, is a good resource because she used to practice out there. She can tell you more about that. But there are opportunities out there as well. Those are the defense side. On the prosecution side, same thing. State's Attorney's Office in Montgomery County, I know we placed a lot of students. Not sure about prosecution opportunities in Virginia. I've not heard about many students there. But the point is, there are lots of externship possibilities for anyone interested in criminal law. And I would highly advise you to get one. You have many opportunities. You get like four more semesters plus two summers to think about that. So, or at least one summer. Probably wouldn't do it your summer after you graduate. But at least after this summer, you got another summer, and then you got the four more semesters. So think about doing that for sure. So those are some sort of, like, I feel like, not requirements, but strong recommendations. On top of that, we got lots of upper-level offerings in criminal law, just tons and tons and tons. Professor Ira Robbins, who's on sabbatical this semester, is our post-conviction expert. He teaches a number of post-conviction seminars, you know, about habeas, about prisoners' rights, etc. Professor Jones teaches a course called Race, Crime, and Politics that deals with the race in the criminal justice system. I teach a course called Criminal Defense Theory and Practice, which is kind of a combination of a trial ad course and defense theory. And you have to apply to get in the class. It's by permission only. It's a small class, 10 students only. We do very intensive trial ad skills and sort of teaching a lot of the substantive law that you need to know to be a public defender. It's very focused. It's totally on the defense side. And there are a number of other, like, criminal law courses and seminars. I can't even begin to go through all of them, but you'll see them when you look in the course catalog. One other that I would mention that I feel is a must for someone who's interested in practicing criminal law is Criminal Procedure 2. So you guys will all be taking Criminal Procedure in the fall as a required course. And that course, it's really kind of a misnomer because it's not criminal procedure in the same way that civil procedure is civil procedure. When you think of criminal procedure, you would probably be thinking it's a course that teaches you about the criminal process, like if somebody gets, like, from arrest through sentencing. That's not the required course. The required course that you all will be taking in the fall, called criminal procedure, is actually, it's more like a constitutional law course because it's basically Fourth and Fifth Amendment law. Like, you know, that's what you'll be learning. But there's a course called Criminal Procedure 2 that is the process. It's basically the law is from arrest through sentencing and the law applicable at each stage of the criminal process. And that, to me, is a must for anybody who's going to be practicing criminal law because it teaches you sort of the bread and butter stuff that you're going to have to know if you're going to be practicing either as a prosecutor or a defense attorney. So, just throw a lot of information at you. So I think probably best for me now to open it up for questions by anybody. Did you guys think that this started later?
Does it not?
Maybe Professor Taz wasn't going to come to
a. You know what? And I was very confused by it too. What, you guys obviously thought it started at 4?
I mean, on this sheet, yeah. It just says that they all run.
From 4 to 4.
And then it's got a couple asterisks after it.
That confused me too, and you know what I think that meant? That meant that Professor Tassis isn't coming until 4:20.
That is very confusing.
It's very confusing, and I'm going. No, don't. I'm going to complain to them because it was very confusing to me. I actually tried to reach the powers that be to ask them, is this at 4 or 4:20? And I never got a response, so I just came up here at 4. And then when I looked at it, I thought, you know what, I think it's just, because I know he has class until 4:20, and I thought, okay, this probably means he comes at 4:20, but that was very unclear.
Almost so many people show up. And
I make this start over. Yeah, the reason why I assumed that it must meant 4, because since it has to end at 4:50, I thought, well, that must just mean he comes in. But anyway, let me just open it up to questions, and even if I have to repeat something I've said before, I'm totally happy to do that. Yes.
Do
You mentioned the clinics and getting into them. I'm just kind of confused on the clinic thing in general. Is it sort of like an organization or something that you would, I guess, become a member to for a certain period of time? Is it like a yearly thing or a semester long?
No, the clinical part, and what you should do, they have informational sessions, and they should be coming up soon where they explain how it works. And so you should definitely go to their informational sessions, because I don't begin to know the ins and outs of it. But I can answer your question. No, it's not an organization. So the clinical program is definitely a part of the curriculum, and it's a course. It's a different kind of course, though, because it involves students representing clients while being supervised by an attorney, one of the professors here who's an attorney. And so you basically, for the criminal, it's different from clinic to clinic. So as I mentioned before, we've got civil clinic, we got human rights clinic, disabilities rights, etc. So I'll just focus on the criminal clinic. They have a prosecution semester and a defense semester. If you're in the defense side, you would basically be representing clients, and the professors there there's usually a seminar that goes with it where they sort of teach you substantive issues about how to represent clients, about being client-centered, you know, the basics that you need to know about the attorney-client privilege, so on. And you get clients, and the clients usually are juvenile clients charged with minor offenses for obvious reasons. You guys are students, so, you know, they're going to throw you a first-degree murder case or anything like that. But you would represent the clients, and it's in Montgomery County. All of the clients are in Montgomery County. And you meet with the clients, you learn defense theory, you learn what needs to represent a client, how to investigate the case, you know, how to seek the best defense possible for the case, how to advise the clients, and if the case goes to trial, you try the case. Or if there's motions, you do the motions. And the professors are there in court with you, but you're the lawyer. You're the student lawyer. They have something called a student practice rule in Montgomery County and in D.C. where students can actually practice in court, as long as they're supervised by a lawyer. And so under the student practice rule, you actually get to try the case. And so you prepare it, you work it up, you work with the client, you go visit the client, you meet with the client, you do everything a lawyer would do, but you just do it under the supervision of, you know, the professors who are running the clinic. But yeah, it's not anything you join. You apply. You have to apply, however, to get into the clinic. And because there are fewer clinic slots than there are students that can get, not everybody gets in, and not everybody gets their first choice of which clinic they want to get into. But that's basically how it works.
Do you have any recommendations or who not to take for CrimPro?
See, I'm not going there. No, I will say that we have, all of our professors are great. So I will tell you this, that some of the criminal procedure professors are full-time, you know, tenured or tenure-track professors here, and some of them are adjunct professors. You guys know what adjuncts are. These are folks who are practicing, but they may come and they just teach a course here. But I don't... Whether they're good or not doesn't necessarily depend on whether they're adjunct versus full-time. I teach criminal procedure. Professor Jones, who's on sabbatical this year, teaches criminal procedure. Professor Taslitz, who some of you have, he's visiting this semester, but we have hired him full-time. I'm happy to say he's amazing, and we're so pleased that he's now full-time, and he's I know him well. So these are the folks that I know, and I know that they're all fantastic. I don't necessarily know all of the adjuncts, but I do know that some of them, like one of them who just started teaching last year, Sean Robinson, I heard that, you know, students saying great things about her, and she's only been teaching once. She's been a U.S. attorney for many years. So I can't get into this. I would never get into this is a bad professor. I would never go there. No, I can't. Yeah, that would be inappropriate, although I've heard that some of my colleagues do that. I don't think that's appropriate, so I can't say that. Certainly not in an open public room like this. Yes?
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Do people typically take CrimPro and evidence at the same time? Is that the kind of track people do? Or
you can,
it,
yeah.
I mean,
that one, those
is that too hard, you know, to do that?
No. I mean, it's not too hard. I mean, you got to take into account your full schedule anyways.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, evidence is 4 credits.
Right.
And Crim Pro is 3. I mean, you know, you got to look at your whole package and how many credits you're taking overall. I mean, I would. So you want to take just the recommended number of credits. But there's nothing wrong with taking them at the same time. In other words, they're not sequential. They don't. I don't want to say they don't have anything to do with each other, but in a way they kind of don't. I mean, they're about totally different subjects, and so it's not like one's a prerequisite for the other or anything like that. What I will say, and I'm glad you asked your question, is that I think it's advisable to take evidence before you take trial advocacy or the clinic. I can't remember now with trial advocacy whether they make evidence a prerequisite it may be either prerequisite or co-requisite. Right, co-requisite, meaning they advise you to take it at the same time or before. Obviously, in my personal opinion, it's going to be more beneficial, obviously, to have taken it beforehand. I don't think it's absolutely necessary if they say co-requisite. I mean, my criminal defense class that I teach, evidence is not I don't make it a prerequisite. But, you know, I think students who've had it, you know, tend to find it a little bit, you know, an easier way to go than those who haven't taken it. But as far as getting back to your question, Crim Pro and evidence, sure, you can take them at the same time, and a lot of students do. And evidence is also offered over the summer, and so some students do that if they're able to. Not everybody's able to take courses over the summer, sort of because it is a prerequisite for a number of courses, or advisable anyway. Yeah.
Sort of building off Adam's question, I know through our 1L year there have been maybe a course or two that, despite only being worth 2 credits, that seemed like really big time.
You wouldn't be talking about legal rhetoric, would you?
I might. I wonder if there are any courses.
Hearing that for 20 years, 15 years I've been here.
I wonder if there are any other courses that we should just at least be aware of, that if we are going to sign up for them, we should be prepared for somewhat disproportionate sort of workload.
You know, I can't even, that's hard to say because professors are so different, you know, in terms of like, I mean, even for something like a seminar, a lot of the seminars, there are some 3-credit seminars and some 2-credit seminars, but some professors put on, you know, require lots of reading per class as compared to others, you know, that's just going to really vary from class to class. I wouldn't say that would be the case for any other course like that. I mean, you know, I don't know if that's the case with legal rhetoric. I've been hearing students say it for 15 years, so I suppose I should listen to that, but I have nothing to do with the legal rhetoric. So also, the other course that is required is ethics, right? Very important course for anybody who's interested in criminal law. One of the courses that I want to develop, but, you know, probably won't get to teach it until y'all are almost graduating, is an ethics course that's focused on criminal law, you know, prosecution and defense ethics. My goodness. I mean, I just feel that's a really necessary course that we don't currently offer. The reason is because when you take ethics, really, you're supposed to be learning the model rules of professional responsibility, but there's such a wide range of issues that can be covered in an ethics course, and my sense, just from the kind of informal poll I've been taking, is that it really is going to vary from professor to professor in terms of what they focus on. So one big issue in the practice of criminal law is the issue of Brady material. I don't know if anybody ever heard of Brady. So some of you I know have. So Brady is a case called Brady versus Maryland, which the Supreme Court, in which the Supreme Court held that prosecutors are required to turn over all exculpatory evidence to the defense. So if you followed at all the Duke LaCrosse case, you know, you guys have heard of that case, I'm sure. That was a big issue there. The prosecutor didn't turn over the exculpatory evidence that he was required to turn over. So that's an ethical rule. It's also a constitutional requirement, but I've learned that there's some ethics classes where it's not even covered at all, and it's critical to the practice of criminal law, whether you're a defense attorney or a prosecutor. So I just mentioned that because, you know, as is the case, I mean, courses like criminal law, criminal procedure, those courses, it's going to be, most of the professors are going to be pretty much covering, you know, the same topics. But with ethics, I think there's more of a wide range. Yes?
I actually have 2 questions. So, what you just said about having a legal ethics course that focuses on criminal law issues, is there anything that we could do to kind of make that
happen sooner? Because that would be...
Other than asking the dean to let me not teach a class until I can finish developing that course, I don't think that would work. I actually am going to be probably working on it, developing the course during the next academic year and teaching it during the... I'm sure you can take it even if you've taken the basic ethics, but I don't think it's going to necessarily be a replacement for the ethic. That's up in the air as to whether that you could take that and have that fulfill your ethics requirement, but that's irrelevant for you guys because by then you will have taken ethics, you know, your 7 years. So.
And then my other question is, the PDS externship that mm-hmm. you created, I'm just...
So glad you mentioned that. I forgot to mention the PDS externship class. How could I forget that? Go ahead.
I'm confused because I'm wondering what credits are... I know there's that whole thing with the non-classroom credits, and I'm just a little confused because... You created it at WCL, so is it classroom credits or non-classroom credits? Or
okay, so the course she's talking about, it's called, and I'm trying to remember, they keep changing the title of it, but if you go to the course, you know, schedule where you register, I'm pretty sure, I think it's called PDSDC, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So it's got two components to it. So it's basically, I mentioned to you all before that it's important to take an externship, either on the prosecution and defense side, and there are many opportunities in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia to do that, and I think it's important because it gives you a chance to actually get in an office and, you know, see how it's actually done. So if you want to be a defender, you can, through the externship program, apply at these various places to get an externship. It's 2 credits if it's during the school year. You know, you work X number of hours a week. If it's during the summer, you're basically working there full time, but you can do it for credit then too. However, there's this new class called the PDS Externship Seminar or something. I can't even think of the name of it. But if you look at the PDS, if you do it in alphabetical. And how it works is this. It's 4 credits all together. Because the externship portion of it, instead of it being 2 credits, is 3 credits, and you have to work longer hours. The description will tell you how many hours. And you work with an attorney at PDS, you know, just as you would with a regular externship, except you're working more hours with them. So you're working on motions, you know, you're going to court with them, you're going to jail with them, you're visiting clients, investigating, doing whatever it is that the lawyer wants you to do with them, working with them, right? So that's the externship part of it. And then there's a 1-credit seminar part of it, and you have to enroll in that part of it at the same time. And that part of it is a course that meets once a week, and I think they meet on Thursday evenings, at PDS, not here at WCL. And it's taught by a team of PDS lawyers, Renee Raymond and Gia Cobb, who are both phenomenal lawyers. One of them was the training director for you. I know both of them. Teach trial advocacy in various programs with me, and I've seen them in action. They're awesome. So they teach that course right at PDS, which is down at Indiana Avenue across from DC Superior Court. So you'll be down there, you know, working with your lawyer, but that Thursday evening for, I guess, 2 hours, I think. I don't know if it's 6 to 8. It'll say in the schedule.
It actually doesn't say yet.
It doesn't say the time yet. And I think the reason it doesn't say the time is because they try to make sure that everybody who's enrolled in it can, and I don't think they should do it, I think they should just put the time on my advisement. I just know in the past they've done it on Thursday evenings because as they feel like for their trial schedules, that's the best time for them. So I'm betting it's going to be Thursday evening, probably from 6 to 8 or something like that. And, you know, people who've taken it, it's relatively new. So it's only been offered, I think, twice before, and it's going to be continuing to be offered. But it's, I think, a great opportunity for it's kind of like a more intensive externship than a regular one. Same kind of thing is offered in Virginia. There's one on there that says, I think, Virginia. And it's the same thing, except it's in Northern Virginia. It's done at either the Alexandria or Arlington. It's Alexandria. It's at the Alexandria PD's office. But it's the same kind of setup where you're working with a lawyer and then you have the seminar taught by lawyers.
That'd be more for 3 hours? Or is that kind of
whatever? It's not restricted to 3Ls. I don't think it has a prerequisite of evidence or anything. I think 3Ls, and this is true for any course, you know, 3Ls are going to get you know, priority when they're doing the scheduling, because, you know, it's their last shot to take the class. That's going to be true for any class that you apply to. But yeah, you can get in as a 2L, depending on just how many people apply, and whether, you know, if they're not a bunch of 3Ls applying, then you can get in.
Yes. Sorry, I know I talked to you about this before, that you're not screening the PDS.
I'm not. And as of today, because the way, and I'll just tell you, I'm glad you mentioned that, because before that class, the PDS super internship, externship, I'll call it that, for better, and the Virginia one, it's like my criminal defense class that I mentioned earlier. You have to get permission to get in. And the permission is basically the same as permission to get into my criminal defense class. You have to submit a resume and a one-page essay expressing your commitment to and interest in criminal defense. And you have to say whether or not you've taken evidence, not because it's a prerequisite, but because it's a factor. So it's the same thing. And the first time the PDS one was offered, I was doing the screening for those lawyers. I'm now corrected, I hope, the website, so you'll be sending those resumes directly to Renee Raymond at her email address, and it's on the website.
So that's on the website now?
It's on the website as of this morning. I checked. It better still be there. It's taking me forever to fix that. I'm going to scream if it's not on there now.
Should we wait until registration to start sending her those letters?
When do you guys start registering?
Tuesday.
Wait until you start registering.
But then as of Tuesday, we should just send it right to her, or?
Yeah, go click on the thing, but that's what it should say, that right. You sent it to her. So you send it to her, and once you get the permission from her, she'll inform the registrar, and you'll be allowed to register.
Okay. Do you know if
the same is for me. The way I do it is when I admit, because people have started applying in my class as of today, when I admit them, I respond to them saying you're in, and then I CC the registrar so that she can automatically open up the registration. And I think that's the way they're going to do that too. What, you were trying to ask me something else?
If there's a cap, like how many students you think they'll take?
For her, for the DC one, it has been 8. For mine, it's 10.
Okay.
Of course, I don't have the externship part on mine. And mine's different. Mine is similar in that I teach trial ad. It's different in that I don't just teach trial ad, I also teach the theory of being a public defender, the role of a public defender versus the role of a defense attorney, and some ethics. There's an ethics component. I also teach some substantive subjects like discovery, plea bargaining, etc. And then there's also a trial ad part where you get a case file. It's a rape case, and I teach client interviewing, and then the next class you're doing the client interview, then I teach opening statements, and the next class everybody does opening statements, and I teach directs, and then again, closing and cross and so on. So it's a little bit different, but you know, some similarities.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the criminal trial advocacy class would be a good course to take probably after having taken evidence. I'm wondering about maybe some of these other courses that I see, pre-trial litigation or lawyer bargaining, would those be good courses to take in terms of criminal law? Should they also have, like, should you also have taken evidence before?
No, unless those courses say, you know, that it's a prerequisite, a co-requisite, that I would, especially the lawyer negotiating one. But all of those, are those taught by Professor Bowles, any of those? Because I know she created a number of those courses.
I don't see her on there, at least for the fall semester.
Yeah, no, I think all of those are great. I mentioned before we have all of these offerings in the criminal law. Yeah, those would also be excellent courses to take. Definitely.
Sorry, for those of us who came in late, could you just run over the courses you recommend again? You don't need to go into detail.
Yeah, but let me take his question first, and then I'll be happy
criminal
to do that.
Criminal Procedure 2 in the spring, usually offered in the spring, or is that... since Criminal Procedure 1 is in the fall, I guess?
You know...
or is it, you take it the next year?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure. I know the basic required one is in the fall, so I can't imagine that it would be... you would definitely want to take it after that anyway. Yeah, you would want to take it after that. So what I said at the beginning, I'll just sort of quickly, is that first of all, don't just take crim law courses while you're here. You need to take a wide range of courses. There are some courses like basic tax, business associations. Yeah, you need to take those. I mean, you just need to take those. You need to know something about tax and something about that if you're a lawyer. I mean, even if you think you're never going to do it. I just feel like those are basic courses you need to take. They're going to show up on the bar. Even if they don't show up on the bar, and I don't think you should take courses just because they're on the bar, but it's not a bad idea to have some familiarity with these topics. You'll take a bar review course, but. So that was the first thing. The second thing that I mentioned was some of the basic courses that I think all people should take. You know, everybody should take evidence. Everybody interested in criminal law should take evidence, basic evidence, and then there are some advanced evidence courses that I think are beneficial as well. Trial lab, you should try to get in the clinic if you can get in the clinic. You should take an externship, either a regular one or one of these super ones. All of those will give you the opportunity to know something about not just the substantive law, but about the representation of clients and to learn the skills that you're going to need in court. So those are kind of the basics that I think everybody should take. So evidence, trial ad, and you can get in those courses. The clinic is a little harder to get in the criminal justice clinic because there are only so many slots. But even if you can't get in the criminal clinic, even if you get in the general practice clinic, you're still going to learn about representing clients and, you know, client-centered representation. Those are still valuable skills that you're going to learn, you know, even if you can't get into the criminal clinic. But everybody can get into evidence, everybody can get in the trial, and everybody can do an externship. And if you do those three things, I mean, that'll put you, you know, well on your way. I think those are three things you should make required for yourself, even if they're not required, you know, in fact in the school. And then beyond that, there are just a variety of substantive criminal law courses that you should take just according to interest, like, you know, the race, crime, and politics class. There's a post-conviction remedies class. There are a number of trial ad advanced classes that you can take. So beyond those basics, I think it's just according to what you're interested in. Sure.
Sorry.
So
besides tax and business associations that you said, were there any other courses that, like, upon reflecting, wish you took, or something that you took that really helped, that wasn't criminal related?
No, not really. I mean, I would say go based on your interest. And then one of the things I did say at the very beginning is, even if you know you want to go into criminal law, don't, like, come into the school with tunnel vision, like, la, 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 if it's not about crime, I don't want to hear it. Don't do that. Because, you know, this is a great opportunity you have here to learn about a wide range of things. And you never know what you might be interested in unless you open your eyes and ears to it and, you know, just sort of be open to it. So, you know, pick out, you know, or professor that you like, that you had, that you think is a great professor, even if they're teaching something that's not criminal law, you might want to take that professor because they're a great professor and you learned a lot and you had a great experience with that professor. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think a lot right with that. So, you know, there are many criminal law opportunities and I definitely think you should take advantage of them, but there's going to be space and room enough for you to also branch out a little bit, and I would advise you to do that. Because I think you just will have a richer experience, you know. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I did not go to law school to be a criminal lawyer. I thought I was going to do civil rights work. And upon reflection, I think that what I did as a public defender was civil rights work, even now that I think back on it. But, you know, my first year criminal law professor was fantastic, and I was like, wow, okay, that's what I just got totally into Alan Dershowitz. Have you guys heard of Alan Dershowitz? He was one of the lawyers in the O.J. Simpson case. That was my criminal law professor. And he didn't teach criminal law. I mean, you know, upon reflection, I did have to learn a lot of my criminal law during the bar prep because he talked a lot about his cases and just the sprinkling of the criminal law that But he's a great professor, and he's got me into it totally. And I was like, wow, that's what I want to do. I want to be, you know, that. That's just why I say, you know, you never know. That I never thought this was something that I'd end up doing. Now, looking back, I can't imagine having done anything else. So, you know, be open. I'm not trying to talk anybody out of criminal law, as I said before. I want everybody to do criminal law, either as a defense attorney or a prosecutor, because we so need that. But be open. Yeah.
I know you don't know the entire course catalog or whatever, but
I sure don't.
I know there's national security law, Is there a military law?
Yeah, there is a military law course. And I don't know who's teaching it or whether it's offered every year even.
I don't think it's offered fall.
Yeah, we do. Because we have this sort of military courts program thing where people, you know, where they were working on different issues. So I'm sure it's offered here. Just don't know that it's offered every year. You thinking about the JAG Corps?
I'm in Marine Corps. Oh,
JAG, cool.
Which is
a real interesting. I mean, JAG is. So is JAG what it's called in the Marines also, or just the Army?
Well, sort of. They're judge advocates.
They're all called judge advocates.
Right,
in
but
all the different
since we're
branches.
Line officers, we feel like we're a little bit different.
Yeah, Marines always think they're a little bit different. My dad was in the Army for 30 years, so I'm an Army brat. But yeah, the JAG concept is one that is so interesting in that people who are just, you know, in criminal law, you know, not in the military, are really looking at these days because of the whole idea that you both prosecute and defend.
Right.
And that's not something that you do, you know, when you're in regular court. And there have been people saying that that's the way it ought to be because prosecutors who know what it's like to defend are better prosecutors and vice versa is what some people say. I'm not totally convinced, but I kind of get the point. But it's a very interesting concept.
Yes. Question along those lines. I know we've talked before about if you know you want to be a public defender, don't go work at a prosecutor's office. I've seen that in the course catalog there's a couple courses geared towards prosecution. Do you think it would be good to take those classes to get that other perspective on criminal law?
Which courses are you talking about in particular?
To find it. There was one specifically about prosecution.
I know there's one that's actually taught at the Justice Department by prosecutors.
Okay.
Let me just tell everybody what that conversation was like. This varies from office to office. I personally do not think that someone who does an externship at a prosecutor's office shouldn't be a defender. I, Ms. Defender of all times, worked at the U.S. Attorney's Office of D.C. during my second summer when I was in law school. And I still got hired at PDS. Today, that would not happen. Because now at PDS, it's very sort of like, it's almost like you have to be born coming out saying, "Wow, PDS." I mean, if you didn't just think about the other side, I mean, that's just, and I'm so, when I advise students, I'm not telling them I think this is the way it should be. I'm just telling them what the deal is. But that's the DC PDS. I mean, I don't think it's that way necessarily at other PD's offices. I know Montgomery County is not like that because I happen to know people who did that and got hired there. I'm just telling people for strategic reasons. If you want to work at the D.C. office, I would not advise you to be working at a prosecutor's office. So I also see their point. And their point is this. We get applications from all over the country. We have our pick of the cream of the crop. All things being equal, we're going to pick the person who looks on paper and otherwise like they're more certain that this is what they want to do rather than somebody who's been kind of going back and forth. That's their perspective because they feel like they have the luxury of doing that because they have, you know, an embarrassment of riches in terms of applications. So that's kind of how they see it, and I get that point. I mean, I used to run that office, and, you know, so I know I ran it a long time ago, and the view was like that then, but not as much as it is now. So not every PD's office thinks that way, but I think more of them think that way than think the other way. Now, that's the strategy part. Putting that aside, do I think there's a value in you if you want to be a public defender and going working at a prosecutor's office? There might be some value to it, but I don't think the value of it is so much that it's worth you taking the risk that that's going to hurt your chances of getting a job. I don't think that. And I also think that because there's so much value in you getting as much experience as possible as a defender, that I wouldn't spend that time just trying to, like, spy on the other side or see what knowledge I can get on the other side. You know what I mean? And I would say the same is true for prosecutors. You know, although I would say I do put what I think I feel like people who want to be prosecutors would get more from working as a defender, but that's reflecting my own bias. And my own bias is that because my own scholarship and research is on prosecutorial power and misconduct and so on, that the prosecutors that I now know who used to be defenders, who've done some defense work, tend to be more balanced and less zealous than those who never looked at the other side, who never represented a client, who never kind of understood the background of clients. But that's my own personal bias, and I admit it. So.
Yes? You mentioned taking evidence before crim trial advocacy. So do you recommend taking that then in our third semester fall instead of registering for it as like a co-requisite for evidence, or?
Well, it's a little bit tricky because if they're doing it the way they were doing it in the past, and you guys can tell me that the criminal trial advocacy, and I'm certain it's still the same, is, oh no, maybe not. It used to be that criminal trial advocacy as opposed to civil trial advocacy was offered in the fall and not the spring. But that may have changed now that I think about it.
You've got like 7 crim in the fall, like 1 civil in the fall. I don't know if it like switches.
Oh, okay. So they may offer some each one, but there's more of one or the other. Yeah. Let me just say this. I'm not here to try to, you know, sort of overrule the rules of the people who run the trial episode, because Liz Bowles knows what she's doing. It's a great program. So if they say co-requisite, is that what it's saying? Does it say co-requisite? Guess what it used to be. Then I would go with that. I'm saying if you have a choice though, and it works out for you to take it ahead of time, I do think it's a little bit better. That doesn't mean that if you take it at the same time that you want to be struggling in trial ad. I don't think that, because as I said, I teach trial ad in my criminal defense class, and I don't require evidence as a prerequisite. And students who come in there having not taken it, do fine. So when I say that, I'm not saying you must do that.
It says prereq or co-req.
Prereq or co-req.
So it doesn't matter which?
Right. If they're saying prereq or co-req, it sounds like they're saying the same thing I'm saying. Because yeah. Otherwise they would have just said co-req or they would have said nothing, right? So it sounds like they're probably mean that it would be preferable for it to be a prerequisite, but it's okay if it's a co-requisite. Which means take it beforehand or take it at the same time. Yes?
So I heard, and I'm sure this is probably a rumor, in order to take the advanced evidence
course... This probably means I can't answer it publicly, but go ahead.
I think you can. In order to take Professor Rice's advanced evidence course, you have to take Professor Rice's evidence course.
I don't have a clue. You had to ask Professor
okay.
Rice. You had to ask him.
Okay.
Clues. I don't know much about him. I do know, in terms of evidence teachers, the ones I know more about are Professors Jones and Tassets, in terms of the kind of teachers they are, how they teach. I don't know much about Professor Rice. So I can't speak on his. I can speak on Jones and Tassens. And I know that they're fantastic, and I know that they teach the course in the way that people who are going to be trying cases need to learn it. Professor Rice might do that too, I just don't know. You know, but I do know about Jones and Tassens because I've seen them teach it.
And I know how they teach it. How similar is Professor Tassens's evidence course to his crim law course? Just because...
Can't be similar because they're totally
different
subjects. Yeah.
He said today in crim that he teaches them in the same kind of way. So, I mean, as far
as... There's a lot of illustrative examples.
Yeah, weird movies, songs, dances.
Okay,
because talking about it. But he said evidence is multiple choice because all the evidence courses are finals and multiple choice, and then for his other courses are pretty much all essay.
Okay.
That's what he mentioned today.
Okay. So then I know that Professor, yeah. Now I do know that Professor Jones and Tassens know each other well. They co-author not an evidence book, a criminal procedure or something book together. So I don't think they've done evidence together, but I know Professor Jones uses movie clips a lot. And movie clips are a great way to teach evidence. She actually has created her own. She also has created her own animated, she wrote and created her own animated film called fighting justice, I think it is. And it's like, it's hilarious, but it's great because it really teaches the rules of evidence. I mean, she shows it at the very beginning of the course, and then she teaches the course, and then she uses it as a teaching tool at the end. And she also teaches evidence to federal judges and law people, and so does he. So they're both really good. And using movie clips is a good way of, it's not the only thing you do, obviously. You got to teach rules and other stuff. But I'm saying as a supplemental teaching tool, it's actually a very effective way to teach. I don't teach evidence, but I think it is a very effective way of teaching. It's 4:55, actually. I'm really sorry about the screw up of the time thing, but it's not any of our fault. It's whoever did it, it's their fault, and I plan to tell them. But seriously, if you guys have any other questions, you know, find me, email me. If you want to come by my office, you can set up a time if you have further questions. I have absolutely no problem following up with that. Good luck to you all. Maybe I'll see some of y'all in my class. My criminal procedure or criminal defense class.
You know.
Oh, no, my class is fun. I have fun.
Motions practice, and I don't do motions practice. They do things I don't do, and I do things.
So they, for a long trial, they are making
family law isn't prim, but it's still one of those good basic courses that I think everybody might want to take.
It's on a lot of ours.
And it's on a lot of ours, too. And juvenile law, definitely, for somebody who's interested in criminal defense or prosecution, I think it's a good course.
Okay.
Can I say who's teaching it, by the way?
Jim, they didn't say.
But no, I said definitely Jim juvenile law.
I have, like, the worst luck in the draw. I'm last pick, so, yeah, we'll see. In college, I was like, 525 for my dorm room. My college was, like, 3, whatever.
But thank you so much. This is so helpful.
I'm glad I saw you here.
I just wanted to say, I emailed you either yesterday or this morning about James Dwayne.
Oh,
okay. It was about